A man from Polson who's been charged with trying to hire a hitman to kill his ex-girlfriend has just entered a plea agreement. That's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition. Good evening, I'm Conrad Scheid.
And I'm Corin Cates Carney. Verizon has settled a dispute with the state over property valuation, and a four-mile stretch of the Bitter River New Hamilton is set to reopen next Monday.
Polson man who was charged with trying to hire someone to kill his former girlfriend so she couldn't testify against him in a rape trial has entered a plea agreement that calls for a 50-year prison sentence. KERR-AM reports 57-year-old Dennis Hobbs pleaded guilty today to two counts of sexual intercourse without consent, stalking, and tampering with witnesses. Under the plea, Lake County prosecutors agreed to dismiss charges of solicitation of deliberate homicide and assault with a weapon. Both the prosecution and defense agreed to recommend Hobbs be sentenced to 50 years in prison, with no time suspended on each rape charge, 5 years for stalking, and 10 years for tampering with witnesses. The sentences are to run concurrently. District Judge James Manley ordered a pre-sentence investigation and a psychosexual evaluation and scheduled Hobbs' sentencing for August 27th. Hobbs was charged in May with solicitation of deliberate homicide, stalking, and tampering with witnesses and informants. He was charged last year with two counts of sexual intercourse without consent and assault with a weapon after his ex-girlfriend reported Hobbs had raped her. Prosecutors allege that after Hobbs' father posted his $100,000 bond in the August 2013 rape case, Hobbs drove by his ex-girlfriend's residence and her place of work, sent her flowers, made hang-up phone calls, and several times asked the nephew of the then-Ronan police chief if he could find someone to kill her. Hobbs has an extensive criminal record, mostly in Idaho, that includes burglary, grand theft, aggravated assault, kidnapping, and domestic battery.
And in other news from around the state, a 21-year-old Victor man arrested after a high-speed chase faces numerous charges, including attempted deliberate homicide after a sheriff's deputy said the man tried to run him over. Logan James Brown was arrested Monday night and appeared before Justice of the Peace Robin Clute on Tuesday on six felony and four misdemeanor charges. His bail was set at $200,000. At the time of the chase, Brown's driver's license was suspended and he was serving a six-month suspended sentence for a DUI. Charging documents say the chase over rural roads north of Darby, west of Hamilton, and along U.S. Highway 93 reached speeds up to 140 miles an hour. Prosecutors say Brown nearly caused numerous collisions. The chase ended when Brown's car suffered a mechanical failure.
A Montana man who pleaded guilty to starting a trailer fire in April 2013 that killed four people has been sentenced to 60 years in prison. District Judge Gregory Todd sentenced 22-year-old Robert Botenhagen yesterday, saying the Billings man had failed to take responsibility for his actions. Prosecutors say Botenhagen and co-defendant Zachary John Kern had been drinking with the four victims and were still in the trailer when the others went to bed. Kern said Botenhagen set a fire in the kitchen and the two men ran out without awakening the victims or calling 911. The fire in the Lockwood trailer killed 33-year-old Amber Marie Bayers, 25-year-old Donovan Fogel, 25-year-old Brandy Henson Motes, and 28-year-old Troy Saylor. Todd also ordered Botenhagen to pay $18,700 in restitution.
A 52-year-old Bridger woman has died after falling into a fast-moving water in the Clark's Fork of Yellowstone River at the fishing access site south of Bridger. Carbon County Sheriff's Lieutenant Josh McQuillan tells the Billings Gazette the sheriff's office received a 911 call about 6:30 p.m. on Tuesday. Rescuers found the woman's body about 3 miles downstream at about 8 p.m. McQuillan says the case is still being investigated. He expected to release the woman's name sometime later today.
A 4.5-mile stretch of the Bitterroot River about 5 miles north of Hamilton will reopen on Monday after Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks closed it in April because of dangerous currents surrounding an irrigation dam. Fishing Access Site Program Manager Christine O'Shell says the Supply Ditch Diversion Dam generates a current that recirculates water under the surface instead of popping objects or people back up. She says it's also deceiving to people floating downstream because it's hard to tell how dangerous it actually is.
When you're at the dam or below the dam, right below the dam, you can see it. So that's the other problem, is that, and we've actually posted a lot of signage that shows a picture from upstream and says very clearly, we know that this thing looks non-threatening from upstream, but this is what it looks like from downstream. And it is threatening. You know, there's been many accidents here.
State officials say there's been 5 accidents since last year, including the death of a 6-year-old girl on June 30th of 2013. O'Shell says the dam gets even more difficult to traverse as the river flow lowers during the summer, and a recently fallen tree is making the dam even more dangerous than it was in April because it's catching all kinds of debris. Officials enacted an emergency closure of the river between the Woodside and Tucker fishing access sites after the most recent accident on April 8th prompted officials to take time to decide how to address safety concerns for people and fish traveling down the river.
So what happens with emergency closures with fish, wildlife, and parks is that they expire after 120 days. And then the other thing is an attorney named George Korn, he actually took us to court over this, saying that we didn't have the right to close it. The settlement was either flow-based, so we're going to do it when the water goes down, or we had to open it on July 7th. So the river has not gotten to 4,000 yet. It's still a little higher than that. It's going to drop really fast here with the hot weather. So we don't anticipate it opening before Monday, but it'll have to open Monday because of the judge's decision.
The Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks has applied for a $125,000 grant through the Montana Department of Natural Resource and Conservation to offset the nearly $500,000 estimate to redesign the dam. In the meantime, officials are encouraging boaters to portage their boats around the dam instead of trying to float over it. Oshel says it's highly unlikely, but officials could close this section of the river again if safety concerns were high enough.
Verizon Wireless and the Montana Department of Revenue have reached a settlement regarding a property valuation dispute. The dispute focused on valuation of the company's centrally assessed property of the tax years 2009 and 2014. The Revenue Department assessed Verizon almost $47 million in property taxes for tax years 2009 through 2013. The property paid over $32 million under protest and dispute over the state's tax property appraisal methods. As part of the statement, Montana and its counties will keep over $22 million and Verizon will be refunded over $10 million. Both parties also reached a settlement over how the department valued Alltel's wireless property for tax year 2010. AT&T bought Alltel from Verizon in Montana that year. Verizon was responsible for Alltel's 2010 taxes. It paid over $4 million in taxes and protested $3.7 million. As part of that proportion of the settlement, the state and counties will keep $2.9 million and will refund Verizon $784,315. Department of Revenue's acting legal chief Dan White says the agency considered the state Supreme Court's Gold Creek decision that compelled the Revenue Department to revise how it values intangible property.
A state can assess or appraise a company based upon its overall worth, even though the worth that may be actually present in that state isn't that high a value.
White says an out-of-state-based railroad serves as a good example. Most of its assets are out-of-state, with only rail line rights-of-way and telephone line in Montana.
So the value of those hard goods wouldn't be worth very much, but the courts have said over the years that a state like Montana can look at the overall value of the rail company, including what it has in its headquarters, and then assess a portion of that value to the state of Montana.
Revenue Director Mike Cadis describes the agreement as a good resolution for Montana taxpayers. By saving the department the expense of litigation and freeing up revenue that can now go toward state and county services.
Minot Air Force Base will be getting about one-third of the 1,100 additional personnel the Air Force is dedicating to its nuclear mission. The Minot Daily News reports Air Force Secretary Deborah Lee James made the announcement during a visit to the North Dakota base yesterday. The military has been working to address problems, including morale and training issues, in the nuclear mission. James says the 1,100 personnel will be moved from other parts of the Air Force to bases with nuclear missions. The Minot base oversees 150 Minuteman III missiles in silos across 8,500 square miles in the northwest and north-central North Dakota. It also houses B-52 bombers. Other additional personnel are going to Malmstrom Air Force Base in Montana and F.E. Warren Air Force Base in Wyoming.
Most of Montana's fatal car accidents occur between May and October, and 60% of those involve drugs and alcohol. Missoula Police, county deputies, and Montana Highway Patrol will be out in force during this long holiday weekend in effort to prevent these unnecessary tragedies. Missoula Police Sergeant Greg Amundson says the 4th of July tends to be one of the most dangerous holidays in terms of driving of the year.
We would just ask that they would get a designated driver or at least make sure that they're not, drinking before they drive while they celebrate the 4th. So I think the 4th of July, while everyone likes to celebrate it, that, I think it's pretty likely that younger people maybe are more ambitious about celebrating the 4th of July than maybe your older crowd.
Law enforcement will step up patrols all weekend long.
We're putting out extra shifts during the day for seatbelt enforcement to make sure that everybody's complying with Montana seatbelt law. And then in the evenings, we're putting out extra officers just to work DUI patrols, make sure we're doing our best to catch impaired drivers.
Authorities also ask drivers to leave their cell phones alone while driving. They also encourage anyone who notices erratic driving that could indicate an impaired person behind the wheel to please immediately call 911.
And now for tonight's forecast, a quick temperature update. In Dutton, it's 86. In Polson, it's 82 degrees. In Virginia City, it's 84. In Missoula, it's 94 degrees. And in Boulder, it's 97. West of the Divide tonight looks partly cloudy with a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms with some strong wind gusts expected. Lows in the upper 40s to mid-50s. Tomorrow should remain partly cloudy with a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms with highs in the mid-80s to lower 90s. In central Montana tonight, expect partly cloudy skies with lows 55 to 60. On Thursday, there'll be increasing clouds and a slight chance of showers in the afternoon, highs 80 to 90. In southwest Montana tonight will be partly cloudy with a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms, lows 50 to 55. Tomorrow, expect clouds to gather over the day with a chance of rain showers and isolated thunderstorms. Those are expected to be severe with damaging winds, highs 80 to 90. And now for the editorial comments of Patricia Rosenleaf.
I don't know about you, but appalled doesn't cover the range of feelings I have when I go shopping for my granddaughter. I have a 13-year-old granddaughter for whom most shopping is done in the gift card area. On the other hand, I still have my little Almond Joy. She's grown since I could call her a peanut, who's just turned 6 years old, and it should be a joy to find a cute outfit for her, whether shorts and a top for summer or a pretty dress or whatever. Starting from when she crossed out of the toddler sizes, it's been more of a nightmare than a pleasure, though. Have you looked at the clothes on offer for little girls lately? If not, just stroll through any mid-range department store and prepare yourselves for a shock. On the racks, you will find tight jeans replete with peekaboo slits and holes, little butts covered with diamonds and studs, and worst of all, words like cute butt or cheeky or, worse yet, sexy. Are you kidding me? This for a 4-year-old? The tops are no better. They often feature crop tops so that their little toddler tummies show, more holes, and even worse messages. One reported Walmart find was a pair of panties with the message, "Who needs a credit card?" printed on the front. True, every once in a while, tucked in the back of a 75% off rack, you might find a plain T-shirt or a regular pair of jeans. But by and large, the clothing available is of the slutwear variety. The shoes are the same for our girls. Apparently, only strappy sandals with smooth, slick bottoms are available. Or even heels for little girls. A plain patent leather Mary Jane? Not to be found. A sensible sandal? With toe protection and rubber sole? Nada. All the fashions available bring to mind those horror TV programs about little girl beauty pageants, where the contestants are made up with false eyelashes, pancake plaster, and blusher, wear fluffy wigs, false front teeth, sexy short skirts with heels, or more likely cowboy boots, and look about as miserable as any little kid can look. It might just be that I'm an out-of-step grandmother who harkens back to a simpler day, but I've never been that kind of person. It's more that I object strenuously and down to my toes the idea that any little girl should be made to look sexy. The sexification of our daughters is just beyond horrifying to me. This fad or trend is part and parcel of a larger trend in the United States. The dumbing down of women, the war on women, the disenfranchisement of an entire sex. You may be saying to yourself, all right, listen, I'll buy that little girl's clothing is beyond tasteless, but how does that translate into a war on women? I'd answer that by saying it started in part with the wish from a group of old white men to go back to the 50s when times were good for them and damn few others. They look back at that time and see that women were in their place, under their thumbs, at home, in the kitchen, and in the bedroom. Wives were admonished in an article in the Pictorial Medical Guide of 1956 to, quote, not ask their husbands questions about his actions or question his judgment or integrity. Remember, it advises further, he is the master of the house. You have no right to question him. Further, the wife should not bother their husbands with the paltry concerns of the household, but rather provide a comfortable setting to which their husbands would wish to return. Well, I guess for an old white guy, that pretty much sounds like heaven, but for anyone else, several words come to mind to describe such a situation, but heaven isn't one of them. So it's one thing for these people to wish something, but how to attain it becomes pretty easy, actually, if you have enough money and influence. Write this up as a goal and see what kind of legislation you can come up with. Bills having to do with women's reproductive rights, abortion, curtailing birth control, demonizing Planned Parenthood, and the full-scale death warrants put out on doctors willing to perform abortions. Along with legislation, since we're talking about people of wealth and influence, how far a stretch is it to influence the clothing industry? One way to restrict women's rights is to minimize and marginalize them, vilify them if they're single parents or work at a minimum wage job, and certainly make them look the part of someone who provides little else but sex. And it isn't just in the area of clothing, but also toys and books for our daughters and sons, for that matter. Writing in the New York Times last year, Elizabeth Sweet, a doctoral candidate in sociology, writes, "We've made great strides toward gender equity over the past 50 years, but the world of toys looks a lot more like 1952 than 2012. In the 1970s, toy ads often defied gender stereotypes by showing girls building and playing airplane captain and boys cooking in the kitchen. But by 1995, the gendered advertising of toys had crept back to mid-century levels, and it's even more extreme today. In fact, finding a toy that is not marketed either explicitly or subtly, through use of color, for example, by gender has become incredibly difficult," end quote. So in sum, at the least I've been robbed of buying little girl cuteness for my granddaughter. At most, I see a disturbing trend among Americans that feels closer and closer to the dystopic future as described by Margaret Atwood in The Handmaid's Tale. The first time I taught that book in the 1980s, I found the plot far out and unrealistic. The last time I taught it in 2003, it seemed scarily possible. A war between religious factions, women of the extreme right, relegated to the kitchen and the bedroom, stripped of all rights and privileges, raised for the purpose of procreation and kitchen work. It sounds like that old white guy dream to me. Rebecca West, the author, said it well when she opined, "I myself have never been able to find out precisely what feminism is. I only know that people call me a feminist whenever I express sentiments that differentiate me from a doormat or a prostitute," end quote. This is Pat Rosenleaf, a child of the 60s, who ever strives to be different from a doormat.
Patricia Rosenleaf is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed don't necessarily represent those of this station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Corin Cates Carney.
And I'm Conrad Scheid. Thanks for listening, and please join Edward O'Brien tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News.